Because I'm about to tear up.
Big time players, step up in big game. That's all I gotta say. Big time players, step up in big game. All the criticizing and all that, it's over, baby. Big time players, step up in big game.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss and Nick here with you once again before we break down Daniel Jones breaking the primetime losing streak. We got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. And of course, before we get into everything, we have to tell you that we are brought to you by Mojo. How would you like to invest in your favorite players? Well, now you can with Mojo. Mojo has over 300 NFL players listed so you can invest in rising stars like Weiss's Trevor Lawrence, who had a very big game on Sunday versus the vaunted Cowboys defense, or Devontae Smith, or superstars like Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, or Justin Jefferson. By the way, got to interrupt the ad read. What an insane day of football. I mean, weekend. Yeah. Not even just a day. Insane. We'll talk about the Vikings and Justin Jefferson. Wow. Oh, prices move with every play, every game, and every headline. And you can buy and sell instantly anytime all year long, so the action never stops. Mojo is live in New Jersey now. Download Mojo in the Apple App Store today and start turning playmakers into moneymakers. Must be 21 or older to use Mojo and located in New Jersey to make trades. Have a gambling problem? Help is available. 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit mojo.com for more. Gentlemen, happy Victory Monday.
Thank you.
What a win.
Yeah, what a win. I'll let you guys, since I picked the Giants to win, I'll let you guys go first, and then I'll...
I picked the Giants to win, too.
We got to run the tape. I'm pretty sure...
Yeah, I picked the Giants to win.
Yeah, we got to run the tape on that one.
I think we got to run the tape on that
right now. I guarantee you, I said, I'm going to do something very stupid. I picked the Giants to win 21-17. They ended up winning 20-12.
Well, right. Ethan, I know you didn't pick the Giants.
Of course I didn't pick the Giants.
So I'll let you start. I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I mean, this just simply boils down to Kayvon Thibodeau. I don't think – I mean, seriously, when was the last time we saw the Giants have a one-man wrecking crew on defense to that extent? I mean, I'm sure JPP probably had a few games. OC's game against the Eagles certainly comes to mind in terms of the sack total. I cannot remember a time, and I'm sure we'll have to look it up, and we're recording this in the morning, haven't done much research.
The big one is that 2012 Sunday Night Football game between the Cowboys and the Giants.
Yeah.
That was the one that everyone points to and says that was the last time.
So 10 years.
Yeah.
So 10 years since the Giants have had a performance on defense like we saw out of Kayvon Thibodeau last night. Absolutely insane. I mean, he literally changed the game. He had the touchdown. And outside of that, he was everywhere. He was bullying tight. Why you would put a tight end on him, I have no idea. He was bullying tight ends. He was bullying tackles. He was constantly in the backfield. He had 12 tackles or 10 tackles?
12 tackles.
12 tackles, 2 sacks. He was a beast. He was everywhere. Anyone that was a draft analyst or a draft scout that was putting out narratives that this guy doesn't love football, I don't know how. I mean, listen, it was wrong from the moment he stepped on a football field, but it was now wrong on a national stage. Happy for the guy. Kayvon Thibodeau doesn't like primetime. Primetime likes him. That's an all-time quote. Honestly, the reaction from the press was probably better, where he goes, primetime loves Kayvon, and someone just goes, I don't know what that means, but they're going to love it. And he's right, we do love it. So, I mean, he was outstanding, easily the Giants' best player. I'll even give a kudos to Evan Neal, who had a rough game, but down the stretch, I think he picked it up a little bit, and he played well. Same exact thing with Saquon. He had a rough first half, but down the stretch when it mattered, when they needed those chunk yardages, he picked them up. I thought he had a really good game. Daniel Jones, I'm sure this will be a hot topic. I mean, it's already a hot topic of conversation. It's going to be a debate all week. I thought that he executed the game plan well. I think that is the takeaway from yesterday's game. The Giants didn't have a pass attempt over 15 yards. He finished with 160 yards and no touchdowns. So it's tough to say that he had a really good game, an amazing game, but it was very noticeable to me that the strategy was quick passes, get the ball out of his hand quickly. It seemed like whenever they wanted to, the Giants had no problem on first or second down picking up anywhere from 5 to 8 yards because they were getting the ball out so quick to neutralize Washington's pass rush. So he did what he was asked to do. That's what I'll say about his performance. And in the end, it was enough. I'm trying to think who else. Landon Collins, yeah. Revenge game spot. Dan Duggan tweeted it out about how Giants fans were clamoring for this guy for weeks. And it was one of the few instances where the fans were right, because I thought he had a really good game, laid some big hits, had that big stop on third down. And it's really, really good to see him back in a Giants jersey. Giants back in the playoff hunt. Overall, great evening.
Back in the playoffs.
Back in the playoffs. Not even in the hunt. They were in the hunt. Now they're over 90% to make the playoffs.
They're always in the playoffs, but this sort of...
Well, not if they lost. They would have been 30%.
Right, but this is...
Now they're in.
Right. Nick?
That's why you draft a guy fifth overall. When was the last time a Giant draft pick they took that high came into a game and said, we're winning this game? I mean, you saw the veterans on the team say that, yeah, before the game, Kayvon pulled the team aside and wanted to say something before the game. Or did you see what Dexter Lawrence said about, oh, I saw him pick up the ball and score, and I knew this was going to be a long train ride home because he's never going to shut up about scoring a touchdown. That's a guy who wants to win. The Giants have sorely lacked guys who want to win and will do anything to win for quite a while. They found a way yesterday. That was an ugly football game on so many levels. The Giants really had a hard time moving the ball. They only win that game because they score the defensive touchdown and Washington is playing from behind the entire game. They made Taylor Heinicke drop back and throw, what was it, like 30 pass attempts? Yeah, 29 pass attempts. They made him drop back and throw 30 times.
You saw it, Nick. You saw it early in the game, Brian Robinson on the ground. He had 60 yards in the first half. He was averaging like 6.8 yards per carry. They had their way on the ground. And you're absolutely right. Kayvon gets that early touchdown. And I think I said it on the podcast a couple of weeks ago when they played Washington for the first time. If I had $1,000 for every time Taylor Heinicke had the ball in his hands to either tie a game or win a game in the fourth quarter and blew it, I'd be a millionaire. The guy is the least clutch player of all time. He does not have it. So you're right. Make them put the ball in his hands, and he is an all-time loser.
Thank you.
I mean, you saw it. I mean, they hit Washington in a couple chunk plays. I mean, I have no idea what the hell happened on that play on the last drive of the game where I forget who was in coverage. I think it was Moreau, where just went straight by him. Corner let the defensive back let the wide receiver go right by him. 40-yard chunk play. I mean, the Giants got kind of lucky there. I mean, I thought Heinicke was going to score on the play where Kayvon dragged his ass down at the 2-yard line.
Me too.
It looked like he had the angle. They got lucky, but
again, all-time loser.
That's the thing. The Giants are in all of these games, and for the first time, they had a player make up the difference in a game that was close. I mean, it wasn't a team effort. It was three or four guys saying, all right, we're not losing this game. Because there were a lot of ugly things, a lot of really ugly things in this game, but they found a way, and that's what matters.
Yeah.
All right. Yesterday was a great night for me on for many reasons. Living in this area, just listening to the bullshit that I've been hearing about this Washington team, it just really felt good. But I will say this. The reason why I was not nervous, or the reason why I picked the Giants, the reason why I was so confident that the Giants would win this game, is because 2 weeks ago, the Giants outplayed Washington on all three levels. You know, really, I know the Giant offense struggled, but Washington's offense wasn't exactly good either. And the big thing for me was, and I've been talking about this for weeks since Azeez Ojulari's return, is I really do believe this Giant defensive line is really, really special. We've talked about Dexter Lawrence and how he's having an all-pro season. But over the course of the last, I want to say 4, 5, maybe 6 weeks, we've seen Kayvon Thibodeau just week after week after week put up these performances, and we're just like, it was only a matter of time. And 2 weeks ago, you know, the Giant defensive line dominated Washington's offensive line to the point where, I mean, You guys remember that play with Heinicke at the goal line and how he held on to the ball, where it's like, how does he hold on to the ball? Well, 2 weeks ago, it was about 15 different times where I felt like the Giants could put that game away or win that game, and they didn't do it. And I thought that this week was going to be very similar, and I think this time the Giants put it away. And with Thibodeau, it's the one thing about football is I know football has changed a lot over the course of the years, and it's a different league and it's a different game, but ultimately it all starts at the line of scrimmage. And the Giants defensive line dominated yet again, and Thibodeau was the main culprit of that. But Azeez Ojulari was constantly beating his man. Dexter Lawrence was always getting in there. Leonard Williams had a couple of good rushes. And when you can dominate a team at the line of scrimmage, and the thing about Taylor Heinicke is he's just a sorry-ass quarterback. I mean, I don't like
to – He's an all-time loser.
I don't like to I try to refrain from cursing and having that – I call it high school talk when we're talking about athletes and stuff. But
no, come on.
Taylor Heinicke just pisses me the fuck off to the point where – and you know why it is because everybody knows Taylor Heinicke sucks. But because Washington had a little bit of success where they've taken advantage of a lot of bad teams, and even that Philly game, they ran the football. That's why they won the game. They took the ball out of Heinicke's hands. But all this talk about, like, Taylor Heinicke and when you ask, hey, what is it about Taylor Heinicke that makes you want to talk about him so much? And they say, well, even Chris Collinsworth said it. Well, he doesn't have the biggest arm. He's not the tallest guy, but there's just something about him. To me, that I just hate when the thing about this, what they say about quarterbacks, well, he has the it factor. Give me a break. The game plan was simple. Make Taylor Heinicke drop back to throw. The Giant defensive line did the rest. Offensively, Ethan, I think you did a good job explaining it. I think Daniel Jones executed the game plans. I also thought he made some really, really good throws on third down, that fourth down throw.
Yeah.
There was a throw where defenders are coming at him and he throws the ball to Richie James.
Oh, how about Richie James?
Yeah, how about Richie James?
What a game. And he made himself some money too.
Right. And in the fourth quarter, Barkley had, I think entering that fourth, he had like 9 rushes for under 30 yards or right around 30 yards. And he had, I think, 50 yards on that drive, on that sort of put away drive where he really, you saw that burst come back. And it was like, okay, here we go. Take us home. And so all three facets, when you look at it, offense, defense, special teams, did its job. Graham Gano, 2 50-yard field goals. When that bozo Ron Rivera didn't want to kick a field goal for some reason at his own 32-yard line, what does Brian Daboll do? And then what else does he do? 4th and 9, we're going to go for it. I just thought all three facets and the coaching staff outplayed Washington. I thought they were going to do this. It's a great win. The Giants win probability, or excuse me, playoff probability jumps from like 50-some-odd% to 93%. There's still some more work to be done. They didn't clinch a playoff spot, but
couldn't get any help from the goddamn Jets.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right. But the Giants are now, you are seeing what their identity is, their strengths of their team are. On the defense side of the ball, and now the hope is, hey, can we get some guys on that back end back for the playoffs? These final three games. So just all great performance. And for Thibodeau, a lot of people with the stat sheet, he doesn't fill up the stat sheet. I really hope that we can put that to bed now too, and we can just really enjoy this special, special player. Game-changing player. There's few guys that change games like that.
Our good friend Ryan Dizdier brought up a point to me last night. Is Kayvon giving off rookie Odell vibes? Missed some games early in the season. A lot of people talking like, oh, he's got a big personality. Does he really like football? Comes in. Obviously, statistically, he is not up there with rookie Odell, because as soon as Odell came in, he was just, winning games. But at least down this stretch, we are seeing the dominance of Kayvon Thibodeau. I am getting a few rookie Odell vibes from him. The personality, now the production, the rookie arc, first round pick, injured to start his career. I'm getting that vibe a little bit, and I love it. And hopefully we get to see a bit more production down the stretch.
Well, we talked about this when they drafted him. I asked, which Giant pass rusher didn't have a personality?
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Strahan built a second career off of personality. You know,
I mean, you could argue Justin Tuck to an extent, but like, he still had his shtick, you know?
With the media, he was still, like, he had his, you know, there. It wasn't just dry quotes from Justin Tuck would say stuff.
But like Strahan, OC, Kayvon, like those guys are on another level.
Yeah, but I think all of them had personalities, some more than other. But and you know what the crazy thing about this is? Nobody's gonna have a problem with Kayvon's personality because there's certain positions where you can have that personality and nobody's gonna bat an eye compared to, you know, the way we look at receivers.
That's fair. Interesting.
But yeah, I think if from the moment he walked in, you got Odell vibes, the way he talked, the way he carried himself.
The style, the charisma.
The brand. I mean, I think his brand is – I like athletes who have that, who show that.
Me too, obviously.
But man, big-time players make big-time plays in big-time games. And it wasn't – everyone looking at the strip sack. There was a play where he chased down Terry McLaurin.
Yes.
Yeah. And where if he doesn't chase him down, that's a touchdown.
Yeah.
There was a play where, obviously, at the goal line with Taylor Heinicke.
Yep.
There was another play where he blew up the reverse, where he essentially pushed the tight end right into.
To me, outside of the touchdown, that was probably the most impressive play from an effort standpoint, because not only did he blow up the play by just totally knocking the tight end into, who was it, Curtis Samuel?
Yeah.
Afterwards, he winds up like 3 yards behind Curtis Samuel. And if you look at the defensive backs the Giants had out there, it would have been very easy for Kayvon to just ease up. And it was a 2-on-1. Like Curtis Samuel would have gotten like 2 yards. And like Kayvon still would have gotten credit for the play. And he still was the one to make the tackle. The motor is just absurd.
Can I say one other thing?
You can say whatever you'd like.
I'm typically very, very critical of the officiating, but I thought this was a great officiating game.
Very fair game really for both sides. Yes.
Top to bottom, start to finish, especially the finish.
Yes.
I thought the officiating was just phenomenal. John Hussey.
I think they should get raises.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know how like in UFC, there's the fight of the night bonus that goes to the best I think of we should do that with officials.
Absolutely.
I think of all the games this week, this was the officials
he was very game polite of the week. He was very polite. You saw him on the thing, please reset the game clock to 1:26, thank you.
Very gracious. He told Terry McLaurin, you are not on the line, sir.
I thought it was a great officiating game. In all seriousness, I mean, I wipe my ass with people complaining about the refs. That's gotta be
because honest. We've been on the wrong side of it so many times over the last few years.
Truthfully speaking, I don't think any Commanders fan listens, but if you are listening and you're pissed about the officiating, I wipe my ass with your tears, man. With all due respect,
it's a weird idiom. I don't think that's correct, but I understand the sentiment.
I'm just saying, and the Giants, man, they fucking loved it, man. You guys don't understand.
It was great.
You guys don't understand. Great. Living in this area, just hearing about Tyler Heinicke, it's just been.
Now, just imagine if the Giants had an offense that could make the opposing offense
have
to throw.
Well, here's my thing, and I want to talk about the offense for a second. So, like you talk about statistical performances for Jones, I don't think they're going to get those this season. They just don't have the receivers. Like they don't have like a Jahan Dotson who can win, you know, one on one.
God, I
like
love him so much, dude.
He's very good.
They don't have that. They don't
it
have.
It really is such a shame that the Commanders, like, I feel bad. I really do, because, and not for, you know, the Commanders, but some individual players, because it's just. You watch some of these games around the league, and I always come back to Tom Brady's comment earlier in the season where he said, there's never been more bad football than there is right now. And you just, I mean, dude, every week, whether it's primetime or otherwise, you look around the league and you scratch your head. Like, what are these coaches doing? The Commanders come out in the second half. And I guess Ron Rivera had an epiphany in the locker room where he said, I have Terry McLaurin. He's my best player. I'm going to get him the ball. I'm going to get him the ball. Yeah. And it's just like, dude, between the coaching decisions that the Commanders make, I mean, Jack Del Rio, Ron Rivera, like there isn't, like if that was the Giants coaching staff, I would be just apoplectic.
Oh, with this roster, yeah.
Because outside, and that's the thing. They bring in Carson Wentz. He's buns. And now they have Taylor Heinicke commanding, no pun intended, an offense that has Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, Curtis Samuel, Brian Robinson, Antonio Gibson. Like you give that offense to Kyle Shanahan and you are like 11-3.
What this piece of shit, Taylor Heinicke?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's crazy how bad some of these coaches are.
The big thing.
The Jets. Salah, what was he doing at the end of the game? How do you let 45 seconds run off the clock when you have three timeouts? The clock management stuff is inexcusable. 12-year-olds playing Madden manage the clock better than people in the NFL.
It's true.
You need as much time as you can. You can't let the clock run. Kicking the field goal on the 32-yard line and missing that extra point because you take a bad penalty. Like the little things killed Washington in that game yesterday. Washington's a more talented team than the Giants. The Giants outcoached them and found a way.
Giants are better. They're better than the Commanders. They match up really well against them. But I get what you're saying. They do have more talent. Yeah. Here's the thing about Ron Rivera. This has been my biggest issue with him. I think he's done a good job in terms of like eliminating the whole shit going on with Dan Snyder.
But that's actually a good point.
He's the de facto GM in Washington. He's the head coach GM. I don't think he really understands the importance of the quarterback position, or at least he's not showing it. Because in 2020, God rest his soul, Dwayne Haskins was supposed to be their starting quarterback. But as soon as he came in, he was non-committal on Dwayne Haskins even being on the team, let alone the starting quarterback. He went through the entire draft process. He had the number 2 pick in the draft. Look, at the time, Chase Young, no-brainer. Obviously, best player in the draft, and I'm not trying to do hindsight. But at the time, I was saying, shouldn't they take a quarterback? Like, do they plan on being in the top 5?
Well, who are the quarterbacks in that draft?
Herbert.
That was the Herbert 2.
Oh, God.
Tagovailoa. Like, I said, hey, like, I literally said, I think Washington should take Justin Herbert. I literally said that. Hand to God.
Well, thank God they didn't.
They need a quarterback. I said, they need a quarterback. Look, I know Chase Young is great, but you need a quarterback. And I got laughed at. How can you pass on Chase Young? How can I pass on Chase Young? And again, I understand Chase Young is hurt, and when he comes back, he could be a dominant edge rusher like Kayvon Thibodeau. But he, like, the quarterback
Chase Young position, has Kayvon Thibodeau posters in his bedroom.
What do I always say? Like, and it's like, if you do not have a quarterback, you don't have shit. And like, Washington is that. Look at that roster. It's a very good roster, especially offensively. They have.
I would say it's very good. I would say it's solid.
No, offensively speaking, like they
the skill positions are very good. The offensive line is awful.
Yeah,
the
offensive line stinks.
It's a below average offensive line, but I'll tell you this much. I think a lot of it is because the quarterback is, first of all, he's not good, but they wait long for plays to develop. And when you face a defensive line like the Giants, who can they can win their one, all four of them can win that 1-on-1 matchup. Like I really am patting the Giants defensive line on their back. But like we saw them against Philly, like they're not garbage. Like they are an average offensive line in the National Football League. And I think if they had just if they had an average quarterback, I do think this offense would be a lot better.
Yeah,
like
me
if
too.
You would have. If you would have taken, if you put Daniel Jones on the Washington Commanders, I think they are a playoff lock right now, truthfully speaking.
Ooh, I would need to look at their, because I know that they started like 1-5, right? 1-4.
Yes.
I would need to see who those losses were too, to be honest.
I truthfully speaking, I think if you took Daniel Jones and put him on Washington, they are a playoff team. Because that's a quarterback that's really relying on his surrounding. And I think that surrounding would be good enough for him. I mean, they would, with that running game, I do believe that they would be a lot.
Yeah. You know, you're probably right. Because, I mean, what are we talking about here? An extra win has them in the playoffs?
They would have the same record as the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah. What are the Cowboys? Well, after yesterday, what are the Cowboys?
10-4. 10-4.
I don't think they would be 10-4, but they would have maybe another win.
Yeah. Oh, we got to give Jones his flowers for the play on the third and 10, like what was it, 3rd and 15, where he picked up 9 and got in a field goal range. That was a ballsy play.
Very ballsy.
Here's what I'll say about Daniel Jones is after yesterday's performance, like statistically speaking, he's not going to have those big games, but what he's showing is that, hey, you put together a game plan, I can execute that game plan. Like, I think Daniel Jones can throw the ball deep if they want him to throw the ball deep. But the problem is they don't have that receiver. They don't have Terry McLaurin or even somebody as good as Jahan Dotson. But I think what he is showing this season, and particularly yesterday, was like, you know, maybe if they get him better receivers and you know, the offensive line improves. Like, I'm not saying the ceiling is the Super Bowl, but I do think that raises his floor more. You know, we talk about low ceiling, high floor. I think it raises the floor a little bit more because
you know what my counter to that is?
Yes. You got to win the Super Bowl with ceiling, not floor. That's really sure.
Yeah. I'm gonna let someone else take that risk and find out.
Yeah, that I agree with.
I don't want to do this, Daniel Jones.
You right did now. This. I didn't I do this.
I think there's six.
But this is a different conversation than we've been having. This is a point about ceiling versus floor. This matters.
Yeah, we've had this conversation, but yeah.
if there's six, to me, there's six elite level quarterbacks, right? You got Allen, Mahomes, Lamar, Burrow. I still put Rodgers there.
Sure.
And Justin Herbert. Trevor Lawrence is coming, but he's not there yet. And then after that, I think everybody is just in that same... You know, like I think,
like middle class.
Yeah. Everyone else is a middle class family. You know, some are making, you know, I don't know what's the medium in certain.
Median is 105.
Yeah,
medium.
Whatever. You know, some are making 200, some are making 150. My point is that there's six guys and there's everybody else. When I watch Daniel Jones, I ask myself, it's like, okay, can I win a Super Bowl with this guy? And right now, it's no. But it's like, can I? If he has a better team, am I a contending team with him? And the answer is yes. And I thought yesterday, if he has better receivers, I think that they are much better offensively. I don't think he's not as limited as I think you think he is, Ethan.
I don't think. My counter to that is I don't think his ceiling is as high as you think it could be. And my counter to your, there are only like six guys that are truly elite and everyone else is middle class. Like, yeah, that's fair. But there is that upper end middle class that's like a 25-year-old that works for Google and in 2 years is going to be making $500,000 in salary and stock options. And those guys could be the Jalen Hurtses, the Trevor Lawrences, the Justin Fields, I don't even know. Like those three guys like pop into my head right there. I mean,
the thing about Jalen Hurts is, and this is sort of similar to what I said about Carson Wentz, is that, and we talk about this all the time, is it looks great when you're paying him $1 million a year or $2 million a year. Because you got all this money you can spend on A.J. Brown and, you know, build your defense and your running game and your offensive line. And that's what you're supposed to do. I'm not saying that that's wrong. But shit gets real. And at the time I said $30 million, but now it's closer to $50 million. When the quarterback is now $40, $50 million on your cap over a five-year plan, and you can't keep those guys around him. And again, I'm not saying... That's the norm. No, you have to put a team around a quarterback. But It gets tougher, you know, when he's eating a large chunk of your salary cap.
No one's debating that.
So when we get to that point with Jalen Hurts, that's when we'll say, hey, he's close to that tier where, you know, that elite club. You know,
I think that's his entry into the elite club, if he can do it with that. But but he's still in that, like, oh, like he could, like, look at what he's doing this year. He could. Yeah. That's my point. That ceiling is very apparent.
The point I would make to you, Weiss, is you see the teams who are constantly on the quarterback carousel, and then you see the teams who, when they have a guy they kind of like and they give them a chance to prove it. The example that jumps out to me is Baker in Cleveland, but 2 years ago, not last year, where
right.
He had a pretty good year in the pandemic year, and you could have made a case that they could have given him a real extension after that year.
That was a top two or three roster in the NFL at the time.
Yeah, but you get what I'm saying here, though.
I get what you're saying, but what you guys are doing is you're going to, like, if what I'm saying is, if with Daniel Jones, I don't think his floor is as low as you guys think. I think you can contend with him as your quarterback. He just needs, you know, he's a product of his environment, right?
Yes.
He'll never get into that elite tier. I'm not saying that. But I think he can get into that upper middle class tier, you know, depending on how good his environment is. With Baker, that year where they had that much success, what was the key to their success?
Offensive line. They had the best offensive line in football.
And run the football.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is with Jones, he can be the key component to your offensive success. He just needs... You know,
I think it's a very contradictory statement.
How?
How can someone be the key if they need X, Y, and Z?
Because you can't expect...
Then they're not the key.
No.
They're a cog.
You hear what I said? The Cleveland Browns had success because they asked Baker Mayfield to do less.
Right.
That's why they won all those games.
So Baker was not the key.
Right. I think that the Giants, Daniel Jones, can be the key to an offense. He just needs a better supporting cast. I'm not saying you put a supporting cast around
him. Nick, what am I missing here?
And then take the ball all out of his hands. You see what I'm saying?
No.
You can put the – okay, so here's the thing.
I understand what you're saying, but, like, I don't understand how he is the key if he's getting all these other things that you're saying Baker had.
My thing with Baker was, when you talked about the success that the Cleveland Browns had a strong supporting cast, but on top of that, took the ball out of Baker Mayfield's hands and said, we're going to be a running football team, and Baker, we're going to ask you to make two or three plays a game.
Right, but by nature, if you have a team quarterback by Daniel Jones that has all those things, you're very likely doing something similar.
I disagree. I think he can do more with his arm, and you can ask him to do more than what the Cleveland Browns were asking Baker Mayfield. That's a great comparison. Another comparison is Ryan Tannehill. When they went to the AFC Championship game, he had A.J. Brown. He had a very, very good offensive line. He had Derrick Henry. The Titans' success was, hey, Ryan Tannehill, there's not a lot on your plate. Right. Even though we have these great skill players, where if we had a different quarterback, we could put a lot on his plate. But hey, all we need you to do, we're going to run the football. Right. And we're going to ask you to make 2-3 plays a game. I think with Daniel Jones, it's more about, here's a strong supporting cast. We know you can make some of these throws. We know you can do things with your legs. We're going to put more on your plate. Sort of similar to Dallas and Dak Prescott. I do believe he can be that, and he can have that individual success and that team success.
That's my point. I still think that a lot of the guys you mentioned have higher ceilings.
But do you get what I'm saying, though, right? Like,
I understand the point, but I just don't think it's going to make. I just don't think it's going to make nearly as much of a difference. Like, even Tannehill, we're talking about a guy who, with Adam Gase as his fucking head coach, had multiple seasons where he was throwing for 4,000 yards and close to 30 touchdowns. Even on the 2020 Titans, he had 33 touchdowns to 7 interceptions. Like, that dude's a baller. Like, I don't see Daniel Jones hitting that ever.
I can see him doing that.
Okay.
He's already cut down on the turnovers. I think we can safely say that. I think the touchdowns will come when you have better skill players. I mean, what is the best skill player receiver that Daniel Jones has played with in his career? Golden Tate?
If you ask Will, it's Evan Engram.
That's just my thing. Regardless what they do with Daniel Jones, I'm not going to cry over it. You guys know that. But yeah, what I'm saying is that I think even though he's a product of his environment, which a lot of quarterbacks in his tier are, they're very few that are not, I think you could put more on his plate than you do with some of these other quarterbacks. And a good That's comparison reasonable. To me is
Yeah, easy. Sure.
That was a good conversation.
Yeah.
Sure. What else? We're gonna have a conversation a lot over the next 3 months.
Yeah. It was a wild Sunday, start to finish. Really, I mean,
how about my Colts, baby?
The Colts, man.
That was point shaving. I need a federal investigation into what Jeff Saturday was doing in that game.
The crazy thing about the Colts is that the refs actually helped them twice in that game. Like, hey, here's.
Make Does sure everyone understand game. What I'm saying about the Colts? I feel like I say this every week. I've been saying this every week. Everyone see what I'm saying about the fucking Colts?
Yes.
If the Giants lose to this team, I'm going to end it all.
The way the universe works, man, unfortunately, because you've been talking shit about them the entirety 100%, of the season.
Yeah.
So I need you to just stop talking about the Colts in any way, shape.
But we got
to
talk about them right now.
I don't know, man. Jim Irsay, I actually was having this conversation with my dad. This is the first time Jim Irsay is at a crossroads as an owner. You know, we had Bill Polian, Peyton Manning. Then it was an easy decision with Andrew Luck coming in. You know, then, you know, he made a mistake with Grigson. So it was like, you know, it's no brainer to fire him. Brought in Frank Wright and Chris Ballard. Now it's at the stage where it's like, because now you're a national embarrassment. Of course, you're a national embarrassment. You know, they're where the Giants were the last, you know, 5 years, right, with Gettleman. Is that this is where the Colts are. And you're almost at the thing where you need to bring in a new voice. There needs to be a new face, you need to turn the page. You know, the Jeff Saturday shit was cute and it was funny and whatever, but
before Jacoby Brissett happened, I would have put them in Raiders territory of bad vibes, like bad vibes teams where like, yeah, you got some talent, but like the front office is a mess. The coaching staff's a mess. You don't have an answer at the quarterback position and you just keep losing in horrific ways and you blow it up. Like the vibes are irreparable.
And the owner likes attention too much. That's the other problem. I mean, you saw him at the owner's meeting the other day, ripping a dart on a golf cart, driving away from the.
He needs to stop bringing up the Andrew Luck excuse. I mean, it's been what? Four, five years now? 5 years now? Like,
damn.
Look, we get it. He abruptly retired on you, but it's been 5 years. Like, man, like, you know, like it's.
They haven't drafted anyone except for Ellinger.
No. Nope. They haven't. They've sort of been doing what Washington has been doing. Right?
Pretty much.
Where it's like, hey, we're going to take this.
They literally did what Washington is doing. They started, they traded for Wentz, and now Washington has Wentz.
So I think Jim Irsay this offseason, there needs to be a complete house cleaning. It's like the Giants, and it just comes a time where you got to just turn the page and just sort of start your new era of Indianapolis Colts football. They're a mess. Minnesota, I think.
Come on. They were down 33 points. That's not a good team. You're down 33 points to Jeff Saturday. That's not a good team.
No. What's their ceiling? Do you think they're going to be one and done in the playoffs?
I think they can win one playoff game. I don't think they can beat a good team. I don't think
they can beat the 49ers. No.
Yeah. Say they get Detroit in round one.
Yeah,
that's going to be a fun game. That would be a fun game.
I would sign me up for that. I'm in on that.
There might be 100 total points scored.
I'm not going to talk about Baltimore and Cleveland, but Miami and Buffalo was probably one of the best football games I've watched, regular season games I've watched in a long time. Just really, really good football. And then the snow and everything, really, really enjoyed it. Truthfully speaking, where I was when I was watching the game, I have a knack of repeating myself a lot, and I just repeated it multiple times. Like, yo, that was a great game. to the point where my friend was like, okay, man, we get it.
Football's awesome, man. The 1 o'clock window yesterday, three games going to overtime. It was
just New York Jets pissed me off. Every time I saw Zach Wilson's face, I wanted bash it.
Here we go.
Oh man, what do you do? This guy is the Jets. You know, he didn't even play bad. He wouldn't play bad. I'm not gonna disrespect either.
No, he stinks. Like that.
He stinks. He had two chunk plays that were the bulk of his 250 yards passing. He had two big plays. That's it. I mean, Garrett Wilson was trying his best to drag that offense down the field. He got open every single play.
Yeah.
That dude is amazing.
Sucks that he's on the Jets.
The timeouts, they're saying, what are you taking the timeouts home with you? Like, it's Robert Saleh, what are you doing?
Saving him for next week.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
And they got Jacksonville on a short week. They got Jacksonville on a short week, so Mike White definitely probably won't be cleared by Thursday. That's unfortunate. It's supposed to rain. It's supposed to be like 15 degrees on Thursday. That's going to be a miserable fucking game.
Jacksonville, if they – there's
one game back at Tennessee?
Yes, and Tennessee plays Dallas this week.
Wow. Yeah.
So Jacksonville wins, Tennessee loses. That final Week 18 game is going to be for the division, regardless what happens next week, if – Tennessee loses and Jacksonville wins.
Wow.
Trevor Lawrence is balling. He is absolutely balling the last couple weeks.
I was looking at that Week 18 thing. There's so many, you know, they always flex something into the Sunday Night Football window. The AFC North could be on the line in Week 18 between Baltimore and Cincinnati. They play each other. Obviously, we just talked about the AFC South.
Bro, is Lamar playing next week?
I don't think so. I need him to play for my fantasy team.
Same.
I had a bye this week.
Me too.
Talk about the turnaround. I was one of the worst teams in the league.
Which, by the way, like, I need 15 half PPR points from Christian Watson in one league. Otherwise, I'm Sacco. And I probably would have a much better chance if Terry McLaurin wasn't a fucking dumbass, because I needed Brian Robinson points. But I digress. Anyway, back to the NFC North.
On the NFC side, Green Bay is not finished yet.
That's crazy.
Somehow, they stink.
If they win tonight, right, and they
which
win
they
out.
Should.
That final game against the Detroit Lions could be a win and end situation.
That would be amazing.
Which is it's crazy, right? Like it is insane. They have to win out, obviously. And I don't have the Packers schedule in front of me, but just looking at that Week 18 thing, I mean, there's so many potential matchups, and you know, obviously the Giants could be in the win and end scenario too. Washington could be in a win, and I need some help to get in. Obviously, we talked about
it's tough for the Packers. It's really tough.
And then, oh, by the way, there's the whole NFC South situation.
Carolina's still alive. Carolina at 6-8 is alive.
It's going to be interesting next 3 weeks.
Oh, by the way, kudos to the Saints.
Yeah.
Because that win yesterday moved that Eagles pick from 5-9.
That really does help.
It does. That's a big difference.
I just want to look at the Packers schedule.
I just pulled it up. It's hard. It's tough. They have the Rams tonight. Then they're at Miami.
Yeah.
And they host Minnesota. And then they host the Lions.
Yeah, that's tough. But if they get back, if they get through the Dolphins, then those next two at home division games. Miami's a tough one. Miami's a tough one on Christmas.
Very tough.
That's a Christmas
Miami's
game.
A good team.
So is Minnesota.
The AFC is a gauntlet, man. You think about all of these teams. Like, Miami would be, like, probably the second-best team in the NFC behind the Eagles. Miami's really good.
That's why that one seed is so important. Because if not, going through that, like, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Kansas City, Miami.
Kansas City's looked weak the last 2 weeks.
They have not looked good. But still, I mean, it's a gauntlet.
I wouldn't want to see Justin Herbert either. Justin Herbert out there dragged that team. I mean, that's a scary dude you don't want to see in a playoff.
Yeah. Their defense is getting a lot better week to week.
Yeah.
Their defense has been very, very good, and they're getting guys back. It's gonna be a fun 3 weeks. I'm so happy the Giants won, guys. Like, you don't understand.
Scenarios, clinch scenarios. We get a win next week. Detroit loses. Washington loses. That's a clinch.
The big one is Indianapolis. But if you could somehow pull an upset against Minnesota, which I think is doable, given how Minnesota, you know, they're like the Giants are like the Diet Coke version of the Vikings. The Diet Coke version of the Vikings.
How are you coming to that conclusion?
Because the Vikings just win close games, and they're more talented. The Giants win close games, but they're not talented.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I asked you guys what you think about Minnesota, and neither of you said they're not
that good. But the Giants, I mean, come on, the Vikings, the Giants would need 3 weeks to come back from 33-0.
I understand that. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like they're the Diet Coke version of the Minnesota Vikings.
I don't want to drink your Diet Coke.
Or the store brand, the store brand version, right?
Sure.
Store brand version.
Sure, Weiss.
That's what they do. They play close games and they come back and they win. That's what they do. And their quarterback plays erratic at times. And they have they have more skilled players, but you know, they play through Justin Jefferson. It's a sort of similar game plan. Like
Jefferson. Thielen.
Yeah, Thielen and Hockenson and Dalvin Cook. You know, I get what you're saying. My point is the way they win is very similar to the way how Giants win. It's just sort of like a store brand version of the Vikings.
All right, let me ask one question. Let me ask one question before we get out of here.
I was going to talk about the Patriots, but.
Oh, I wanted to make fun of the Patriots too. Me please, too. The floor is yours, Ethan.
I don't know.
I have nothing to say about the Patriots.
What type of in-game awareness Joe Judge and Matt Patricia are teaching over there in New England?
It was a revolt. They revolted against them.
I don't think that's what it was. I think they're just applying their teachings onto the football field.
How scared do you think Mac Jones was when he saw Chandler Jones running at him full speed with the ball?
I
feel so bad for Mac Jones, man.
I don't. His dog levels like zero. Bro, how do you not grab a fucking shoe and
let
ankle?
Chandler Jones drag you? Grab him by the seriously. Ankle and if he drags you 30 seriously. Yards,
he tried.
He didn't. No, he got run over. And he didn't even try to grab him. It was pathetic. Jacoby Myers probably shouldn't have played because it's very clear he had a concussion. Yes, so you know he still has got fucking brain damage from the week before. It's why he's trying to throw that ball all the way back to Mac Jones. I mean, that's just any other coach gets fired for that loss. They do.
I just think there's a revolt. They want to get people fired. That's the only way to explain it. Why you're lateraling like that? I just.
There are more subtle ways to go about it.
That's the Bill Burr joke about the malice at the palace. Like your absolute worst fear in the entire world is an enormous dude running at you full speed, ready to beat the shit out of you. That's what Mac Jones saw. That was the football equivalent of Ron Artest running into the stands at you. It's 6'6" Chandler Jones running at you with the ball and the game on the line. That was tough, man. That's a tough look.
The Patriots should be ashamed of themselves. They should. Top to bottom. They should be ashamed of themselves. What they've done with their offense.
That team is only in games because of the defense. That team stinks.
They should be ashamed of themselves. Just as simple as that. No. Belichick, I love him, but just a disgrace what he's doing there with these Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. And for people to don't even get me started with this unnecessary Joe Judge praise that I keep seeing. You know,
who's praising Joe Judge, Weiss? Give me that.
I was praising is not the right word, but a lot of excuse making for Joe Judge since he's been fired.
Revisionist history.
Yeah, a lot of it. Yes, Ethan, a lot of that shit. A lot of that shit. Hey, the lateral this year, the fucking quarterback sneak last year, you know, that's what he does. It's what he does. Yeah. And people continue to make excuses for him. A couple of people that cover the team, too. That's a hero there, though. We're not going to go there.
Anyway.
All right. Who's the coach of the year? Last question I have.
Brian Daboll gets into the playoffs.
No?
Brian Daboll.
No,
Brian
Nick Sirianni.
The Eagles were expected to be this good.
No, they weren't. Check.
Yes, they were.
They were expected to lose one game?
They were expected to win the division and be the best team in the NFC, yes.
No. First, no. No. If you go 17-1. Dude, we were talking preseason that we didn't know if Jalen Hurts was the answer.
I understand that. Well, that's why
he's got Jalen Hurts balling. Doesn't matter. You and I both know that these situational coaching or like MVP, who's going to win MVP? Like, oh, but like technically this player was more valuable to their team than this player, even though the other player is going to win the award anyway. We all know it because they're going to put up better statistical numbers. If you're in the NFL, you're a head coach, you go 17-1 with a quarterback who's still on his rookie contract that you didn't even know if he was the answer coming into the season. I don't care how good the roster is, you're going to win coach of the year. And he was the odds-on favorite as of last week. So Vegas,
can I ask you a question? Go ahead. Can I ask you both a question? What is more impressive? Brian Daboll winning 10 games with this roster and all these injuries that they saw and 75% of their rookies missing time, actually 100% of their rookies missing time, or Nick Sirianni winning 15, 16 games?
It's really hard.
He's going to win 17.
It's really hard to win 17 games.
It's almost impossible.
Yeah, it's really hard. That's the thing. Like, it's definitely impressive what Dable's doing. Don't get me wrong. To win 10 games.
He's not coach of the year, though.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah. That's why I was curious what you thought. Because this was, I forget what two media people were arguing about this on Twitter last night about which was more impressive, what Stefanski's going
to. Of course, dude, the media's going to do that every year. But again, it's the same thing with like NBA MVP. Like, who's actually more valuable?
Who's the MVP?
I mean, right now. Probably Hurts. Probably,
yeah, so you're going to give the MVP and the coach of the year.
Yeah.
So the coach that's coach of the year has the MVP, has the best roster.
He made him the MVP.
Yeah,
Jaylen, he gets credit for that.
He's developed.
He didn't come into the team with Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady as his quarterback. It was friggin' Jalen Hurts, who was not even a first-round pick, turned him into a freaking MVP. If anything, that bolsters the argument for coach of the year.
Before the season started, the Eagles were the favorite to get to the Super Bowl.
You cut out. What'd you say? The Eagles were what?
I said before the season started, the Eagles were the favorite to get to the Super Bowl. Whether they win 14, 15, 16, 17 games.
What was their win total? 10.5?
I got you. Hang on.
11.5? They might win 17.
I just think he was the favorite. They were the favorite in the NFC, both from a talent perspective, and all of a sudden were in awe because they're doing exactly what a lot of people predicted them to do.
No one predicted them to go 17-1.
15. First of all,
they're shit pumping teams.
First of all, they haven't won 17 games yet. That's not.
They're going to.
Okay, they still have. I mean, they play Dallas on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, if the Dallas defense is going to keep playing like this, and if Dak is going to keep having untimely interceptions, dude, they're going to.
So let me ask you a question. So if
unless
he
they rest their starters week 18, which even
they're likely going to do,
which
Eagles are 9.5, by the way,
nine and a half win total. What were their odds to win the Super Bowl?
That's an even better question.
Well, friend, when are you looking at this? What date is these odds?
That was August 22nd.
Preseason. They were nine and a half.
Insanity that they were 9.5. I wish I would have known then.
I mean, we had Warren Sharp tell us in, what was that, June? Yeah, hammered the Eagles.
He basically said the biggest liability in his portfolio was the Eagles.
Yeah. Eagles were 10-1 to win the Super Bowl preseason.
There you go. I think favorite.
Mike McDaniel, Kevin O'Connell, the job he's done in Minnesota.
I think Kevin O'Connell's probably runner-up.
Mike McDaniel, too. Don't forget about him, please.
Yeah.
These guys are just, understand, these are first year head coaches.
Nick, what are the current coach of the year odds?
That's a good question. Let's see.
Because
I know Daboll has fallen a little bit.
Yeah, of course, because they lost like six in a row.
Sirianni's minus money.
There you go.
Yeah, minus 175. O'Connell plus 350. Sala plus 1200. Oh, Mike McDaniel 14.
Yeah,
that's probably from before this weekend. Those probably haven't updated.
Who's fourth? Mike McDaniel is fourth?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, Sala doubled the win total. The Jets won three games last year.
I mean, the
he's
Giants,
doing it with no quarterback. So
the Giants and the Giants and the Dolphins have the same record.
Yeah, that's insane. Miami also two tough losses. They probably should have beat Buffalo.
I mean, Giants had a tough tie.
All right, word. Touche.
But Sirianni's getting coach of the year. Listen, I understand your argument. Unfortunately, that's just not how it works.
That's not how the voters vote. Coach of the year should be about who's done the best job, not just whose team has the most wins.
Well, sometimes it is, but
same thing with the MVP.
Like, when did Vrabel win coach of the year? Like, what was the Titans' record?
I think 11-5 that year.
Yeah, okay, so he didn't have the most wins, but like, still.
Yeah, very good roster.
Sirianni's going to win it this year. He deserves it, and good on them.
Yeah.
One more thing before we get out of here. Top five draft picks this past draft. Trayvon Walker, Aiden Hutchinson, Derek Stingley, Sauce Gardner, Kayvon Thibodeau. What a top five.
One team made a big mistake.
I think everyone's pretty happy.
Do you think the Jaguars are happy watching Aiden Hutchinson and Thibodeau last night?
Well, I don't think they're unhappy.
Walker's fine.
Yeah, Walker's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, he was going to be a project.
Yeah.
Sauce Gardner, all pro.
Sauce is amazing.
I mean, he might be the best cornerback in the league.
Yeah,
That's fucking crazy as well. I love them in the draft.
He didn't get targeted once yesterday.
He did not get logged as the nearest cornerback once.
Those. What did I say about the pre-draft, man? I told you, I said those Cincinnati guys. They're MyJ Sanders.
That Cincinnati, the Cincinnati defenses for Desmond Ritter's teams were so good.
Yeah,
so there's a reason why they were winning 12 games.
Yeah.
MyJ Sanders, another guy I really liked, is coming about in Arizona.
Yeah.
I had some really good draft takes, man, for this 2022 draft. Some really, really pat myself on the back, man.
Hey, I said Sauce was going to be the best player in this draft, and so far I feel good about that.
Pat yourself on the back for that one.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's get out of here.
Okay, let's wrap it up. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYGDaily. Follow Nick at NickZerars. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe, iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review, download the Mojo app and the Mojo apps in the Apple App Store. If you live in New Jersey, start turning playmakers into moneymakers. We will talk to you guys in a couple days.
Peace.